Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Russ Terry, the founder and CEO of Life Coach Radio Networks. Today's sponsor is Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free audiobook when you sign up for a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/lifecoachradio. That's audibletrial.com/lifecoachradio. And now, here's today's show.
And welcome. You're listening to Mark My Words here on the Life Coach Radio Network. And today is December 7th, 2014. I'm Mark Shaw, broadcasting live from New York City. I'm a certified life and business coach, and twice per month I host Mark My Words, which is a life coaching-oriented show where I interview various people with inspiring life stories of overcoming adversity. I also speak with authors of great coaching-related books and programs, as well as many others who have great things to say. And I even do my live coaching hour where I coach listeners live on the air. So tune in the first and third Sunday of every month. Tonight is another live coaching hour, so call in with any challenge you have that you'd like coaching on. The number to call in is 646-716-9397. We've already got a few people in the queue, for the first half of the show, the first part of the show, we'll be talking with Elizabeth from New York City about staying focused during the stress of the holiday season. And then we've got Nigel in the queue, also from New York City, to talk with us about reconnecting in his relationship with his dad. So some good stuff. So let's go ahead and jump right in. We're going to start with Elizabeth. So Elizabeth, welcome to Mark My Words, and thanks for calling. How are you?
Thanks for taking my call, Mark.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for calling in.
Sure.
So tell me a little bit about what you're dealing with regard to holiday stress and staying focused.
Well, I'm a chiropractor and wellness advisor. I've been in practice for a very long time. And what I find is during the month of December, there's a lot of lack of focus that can really happen with the patient base. And one of the things I find is people get very distracted. They start, you know, missing their appointments or canceling. And I think I need some new perspective on keeping the momentum and the energy to practice really focused on patients and their care when there's so many other distractions going on in their own personal and family lives.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. So you're saying then is the distractions of everything that goes on in your personal life and that takes away from your ability to focus in your office. And I think you're talking about that pretty much happening with your staff as well.
It's more about how to keep my patients a little more engaged and motivated. My staff is really great, so okay. I am very, very happy with them actually. And but there's a certain and there's a, you know, as I said, I've been doing this a very long time, so this is not a new issue. But I'd like to handle this probably a little more effortlessly this year. I think I end up getting a little stressed out over the fact that, you know, we have to do a little bit more confirming. We just have to help patients stay on the path and you know, so they can accomplish their particular goals. And it's kind of frustrating when somebody comes in with a new complaint, a new, you know, problem, and they're unable to really attend their appointments with the frequency that they need in order to get through their initial phase of, you know, of healing from their episode. So
gotcha.
I wonder how I can best help my patients during a time where really there's just so many invitations and distractions that, and that's why I'm calling.
Yep. Okay, great. So So really the main sort of manifestation of the holiday stress is the patients keeping their frequency of visits, which, of course, is necessary for them to heal.
Right, particularly in the initial phase of care, absolutely. And, so I want to know how I can help guide them. And also, you know, at the same time, it reduces the stress on myself as well as my staff.
And tell me a little bit about how that stresses you and the staff. Is it the cancellations and the scheduling?
Yeah, I mean, say, for example, we start, say, tomorrow's schedule, and, you know, we have a whole, you know, set of appointments, and then we get, you know, more than our usual amount of last-minute cancels and reschedules, which I have a very flexible policy in my office, but I find that it's, let's just say, overutilized during the holiday season. And what it does is actually makes a lot more work for the staff, and therefore it creates a little more stress than we need to have.
And what is the cancellation policy that you work with?
Actually, we have a four-hour cancel policy. So you can, as long as you cancel 4 hours before the appointment, we're happy, we can give it to somebody else. That's not a problem. But it's very problematic when you get more than a few, you know, less than the cancels or rescheduled. Yeah. I try to keep everything very flexible for the patients, but sometimes the tests are, you know, our policy a little bit.
So, how typical is a 4 hour cancellation policy in your business, in your line of work?
How typical is it? Well, we 4 hours is fine. We can always fill that slot with somebody else. That's not an issue because we always have people who want to come in. But if some, you know, people will call and say, "Oh my God, I forgot," or "I'm running late from a meeting and I have 4 meetings that I planned," and they're calling us a half an hour before their appointment.
Gotcha.
And it happens with, you know, we are very liberal with our patients. I love my patients. As I said, I've been doing this a really long time, but sometimes it causes a little stress. I don't want to simply have to charge everybody. I want them to just feel, I just want them to call sooner and make their schedule a little, you know, deal with our flexibility a little bit sooner, if that makes sense. That's not the point.
Yep.
The point is not to charge them. The point is to give them the care that they need so they can, you know, they can heal faster. So.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. So the one thing that's coming to my mind, just as I think about appointment cancellations in my business as a coach, is the whole thing about accountability, right? Mm-hmm. And because in coaching, when we're working with clients as coaches, it's about accountability. We're trying to teach the person to have accountability in their own life for many things, all the goals that they're working on and whatnot, and that actually includes how they show up for their appointments, for their sessions, because we kind of believe how you do anything is how you do everything, and if you're doing that with your coaching appointments, that might speak to why you don't have what you want in the area of your life that you're working on. How accountable are you in your life is usually indicated to a degree by how accountable you're holding yourself to coming for your sessions. So I'm thinking of that as you're speaking about. Because it's not about charging people. I mean, especially during the holidays, it's really like the last thing that you want to do, you know. But it's about accountability. It's about accountability. So as I talk about patients being accountable, it's not just to you, but it's also to themselves, to their healing, to their well-being. I'm just wondering how you might frame their need to let you know sooner. If they're canceling, how can you frame that in terms of accountability and how it benefits them to do that?
I don't know. That's why I'm calling you.
What's the conversation you currently have with them?
Well, I don't really do most of the on that level, I don't really do the conversation. That really will go through my front desk person. And often, for example, somebody will call and they'll say, oh, you know, I've really got a cold. I can't come in. And my front desk person will say, well, you know, when you get adjusted, you will often feel better, so it's probably better for you to keep your appointment than not come to your appointment.
Mm-hmm.
So he's good at explaining to them why they need to come, or, you know, you'd only injured yourself last week, and if you want to, you know, get better sooner, keeping your appointment is going to help you rather than waiting till next Tuesday, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So he will definitely reflect it back onto the patient how coming to their visit will, in fact, help them, which is why we're there. So you know,
and how effective is that?
It's usually pretty effective. This is my challenge, that during the holiday season, it happens a lot more than it should. And we're, oh, no, I have too many meetings. I can't get. I'm stressed. I can't get out of the office. They suddenly their calendars become extremely full. And I'm speaking in a general sense. It's not about any mm-hmm. particular patient, but, you know, as I said, I'm doing this a long time. So, the next 3 weeks are pretty much the last 3 weeks that we have for the year, and it'll probably will start, you know, that tendency will tends to start probably this week or next week.
Right. Okay. So your receptionist has those conversations with
her. Yes.
And then just for clarity, are these situations where the patient is calling 4 hours or more ahead, or it's within the 4 hours?
No, it's within the 4 hours.
We ask
that you give us at least 4 hours notice if you need to cancel or change your appointments. So,
gotcha. So during the holiday season,
them
doing it within the 4 hours increases.
Yeah, and it happens a lot more than we are comfortable handling. So,
I'm
just trying to think about being very proactive this year and maybe devising another strategy or two to help the patients realize their own goals, which also, you know, means that we, you know, can run our office less effortlessly and with less stress.
Sure, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So what have you thought of as you thought of proactive? That's a word that came to mind before, just moments before you said it. I'm like, okay, I get that the receptionist handles that when it happens, but what are you doing proactively? So you said you've been trying to think of what you can do proactively. What's come to mind as you've thought about what you can do proactively, or even as you may have even talked about it with your staff?
You know, one of the things that we do, and we generally do this quite well, is when patients initially come with whatever their problem is explain to them what we can do for them, how long it will take, you know, how much it will cost, how this will help. But we try to lay it out very clearly to them, you know, our expectations and how and what they need to do in order for us to help them. So, for example, if somebody, you know, has a pinched nerve and they have pain going down their leg and whatever, you know, I'll tell them, you know, how many times a week for how many weeks we really need to see them in order to get them to whatever their goal is. So
what do you include in that conversation, perhaps around this time of the year, to be able to head off the likelihood that they may have more frequent cancellations?
Yeah, this is coming to mind as you're speaking. I've never actually incorporated, like, the holiday talk, say, for a new patient who comes in this week, for example. And I'm just thinking as we're talking, I could say, and just, you know, while, you know, I'm giving them the treatment guidelines and mentioning that I understand during the holiday time it might be more stressful, more appointments come up, and I just want to emphasize how much better the treatments will work if you are able to adhere to the schedule versus you not being able to adhere to it, and how much and the likelihood of you getting better a lot faster by following, you know, these recommended, you know, treatment protocols.
Yeah, that sounds great, because I'm just thinking, I know that around the holidays every year, my dentist sends out a newsletter, you know, and, you know, it's updates on what's going on in his practice and the additional training that he and his staff have gotten over the course of the year and any changes that are coming up and stuff like that. Do you do anything like that?
Typically, we send out, like, an informational email about every 2 weeks, and we typically send out, written about 4 times a year. We send a written something or other. Very current.
Yeah.
And
sure.
I was thinking that it probably would have been better to have planned, which is not going to happen now because it's a little late in the game. But it would have been better to have, and I'm thinking this perhaps for next year, having a written piece coming out the first week of December. Just, you know, Thanksgiving's over. We've got a couple of weeks left. And that probably would be a good thing for next year. That's not going to happen for this year. It's just that takes too much work. But perhaps we'll send out an email, an informational email, once a week rather than once every 2 weeks. That's our usual frequency.
Gotcha.
So that's something
as you really prep people, and if your email is that frequent, you really have several opportunities as you get up to the December holiday, December holidays, to keep reminding people so they get hit with that message a few times. It sounds like that. I would imagine that's something that would be really helpful.
Yeah, yeah. And our emails are not, we don't solicit anything. We don't do sales or promos. We simply send out
information. Right, it's purely informational.
Just informational.
Yeah.
It's not a bait and switch technique. It's not, oh, if you come in, we'll give you blah, blah, blah. You know. So the feedback I do get is that they really like the information that we send them. So I feel very good about maybe increasing the frequency and doing it once a week rather than once every 2 weeks.
Uh-huh. How satisfied are you with the, if you're even tracking the open rate on those? How many people are actually opening those?
I have to ask my staff. I don't know that off the top of my head. What I am concerned about nowadays is how quickly everything goes into the spam bucket. And I don't know how to avoid that because that changes. It seems that seems to change a lot. And I'll even do a test email for ourselves, and my own email will then end up back in a spam bucket.
Right, sure. Well, and then, of course, there's the issue, too, that with Gmail's recent changes this year as well with doing promotional, they have a whole category where stuff goes into promotions. So there's to separate your personal emails out from things that are promotional, and there's some algorithm that it uses to determine that certain things go into the promotional one, and then they're less likely to be read because people are like, that's in my promotions folder, right?
Oh, it really
and
okay. Right. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So what you have to then inform, so this is great for any listeners out there that run a business. And a lot of people knew that this change was coming, but there are many people out there that are not aware of that. So what you have to do is notify your patients. It's a little hard to do now that Gmail made the change because you can't do it by email. If it's going to go into promotion, they won't see it. But perhaps even face-to-face with folks. Or even something with your written newsletter that you do four times a year, to tell them to make sure to go into the promotions folder, find one of your emails, and tag it as not promotions. So that way it will go into their regular box, and they're more likely to see it. And, you know, you find
that's great, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, like you can label things that come in as spam, and you can go ahead and say this isn't spam so that it knows not to put that same email in spam again in the future. Same thing with promotions. It's a Gmail thing. That drove a lot of entrepreneurs and businesses crazy when it first happened because a huge percentage of people suddenly weren't seeing their emails. They announced the change was coming, so a lot of people were proactive about it, but many, of course, weren't. So that might be something to have your person that does that for you look at. And then again, even to have a tag, you know, you said you do four postal mail written newsletters a year.
Mm-hmm.
So have a constant thing appearing there. You know, make sure you're receiving our emails. If you have a Gmail account, make sure that we're not going into your promotions folder. And anybody with the Gmail account will likely know how to do that. Or you can, you know, briefly outline how to do it as well. That's a really easy thing to take care of. Your web person will know how to do that. But anyway, so back to the issue, though, about helping your patients be responsible for their care during the holidays, I'm just wondering how appropriate you might feel it would be to frame it in terms of taking care of ourselves during the holidays becomes extraordinarily difficult. I mean, nutritionally, we do things to ourselves and our bodies that are just horrible with all the wonderful things that we get to eat around the holidays. And then we get sick. That's why flu season is during then, because we're not taking care of ourselves. And that part of taking care of yourself is also keeping up with your chiropractic appointments, which is very easy to have go by the wayside at a busy time during the year. If you need whatever support you need from us to keep on top of that, please let us know because we want to heal you. How would something like that work for you?
I love it.
Mm-hmm.
I like that a lot.
Great.
Whatever we can do to help support that, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Is it new patients predominantly that you have this challenge with, or is it your existing patients?
Honestly, it goes across the board.
It is,
And everyone's like, oh, my God, I forgot. I'm so busy. I'm blah, 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 blah. I mean, I'm practicing over my 27th year now, so this is not a new problem.
Wow.
This is just I'd like to handle it better this year.
But
people really get sidetracked. I mean, I will have my, you know, front desk people call and confirm and whatever, but this is a higher rate of attrition and last-minute scheduling.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm also just wondering, too, Elizabeth, how you would feel about, like, let's suppose, you know, you have a patient that comes in and, you know, it's November 30th and then their next appointment is going to be, you know, on December 5th or December 7th, whatever it is, December 10th. And, you know that, I assume, well, you might not know that when you see them because I guess they're making their next appointment on their way out the door. But to just even say face-to-face with that patient, hey, looking forward to seeing you next time. Go ahead and make your appointment. And we're just alerting all of our patients to this challenge, and we really want to support you in getting in here. And then whatever you want to say about the likelihood of missing the next appointment, we know statistically is high. So we really just want to remind you to please keep that appointment. It's really important for these reasons. That way they're getting it from you. They're getting it from the receptionist. And I can imagine when it comes from you as well, it may carry a little more weight as well because mm-hmm. you are the doctor.
Yep.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
How would that, what kind of an impact do you think that would have?
Maybe I can ask them, listening to what you're saying, and maybe I can ask them to tell me how we can best support them. Say, mm-hmm. I know it's the holidays and there are a lot of last-minute social events and meetings and things like that. How can we best support you in keeping your schedule so you can heal much more quickly? And perhaps if mm-hmm. they're giving me the suggestion, like, oh, have Emilio call me or send me an email, perhaps if it's coming from them, then it will be more effective than if it's coming from us. Just a
mm-hmm.
thought.
Yep. Love
so
that.
If I ask
Love
them
that.
How we can best support them, that actually would be really good.
Yep. I love that. Certainly as a coach, I love that because that's what we're always all about is, mm-hmm. having the suggestions come from the client, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it may help. I mean, this is up to you, certainly. It may help to frame that request of yours in terms of the greater likelihood of it happening around the holidays.
See, I don't... Okay. Mm-hmm.
Or no. How do you feel about that?
I don't like to interject that, personally.
Uh-huh. You don't want to plant that seed and suggest that
that doesn't sound mm-hmm. like something I want to even put in their heads.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Because then it becomes too familiar. It's like, oh, yeah, she said there was a greater likelihood I'd miss the appointment. So,
uh-huh. Yeah.
I don't want
Great.
To plant that seed.
Yep, absolutely. Very good, yeah. Good. No, I like that. You know the business, you know your patients. So I actually love it when I'm coaching somebody and a suggestion comes up and they quite honestly say, no, not going to work. Love that. So thank you for not just going, okay, cool, thanks.
Yeah.
But great. Very good.
Excellent.
So great. So Elizabeth, you're welcome. Tell me what's the biggest insight you got from this conversation?
I think it just helped me solidify some of my positions. And hearing you talking about assisting our patients and helping them take better care of themselves during the holidays, it sounds different than what it's in my head or it's coming out of my mouth. Hmm. So listening to somebody else say it, in a way, has a greater impact. So mm-hmm. it's just reminding me that, for us to ask them how we can assist them in taking better care of themselves during the holidays, it feels very right. So I like that.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, great to hear. Glad I could be of help.
Oh, I'm thrilled. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome, Elizabeth. Thanks again for the call. Good luck. And let me know. Follow up with me. Let me know how that goes.
Will do.
All right. Thanks for calling, Elizabeth. Good luck and happy holidays.
Thank you. You too.
Bye-bye. So, great. Great. And it's interesting because I know a lot of my listeners are coaches, and so there's probably some real value there as coaches missed appointments, for anybody who's in this kind of business where you're seeing clients, sessions, patient appointments. This is something that's a likelihood, and I guess around the holidays, certainly for coaches, that's something that can happen for us as well, too. So hopefully that was something that you can all take something from. So, great. The number to call if you'd like to talk to us live here at Mark My Words is 646-716-9397. And before we get to our next caller, we're going to take a little short announcement break while I announce some great stuff that's available to you as a Mark My Words listener from our sponsor, Audible.com. So Mark My Words is happy to be sponsored by Audible.com, which is a leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment and information. They have more than 150,000 titles to choose from, and you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you're hearing us on right now. And if you sign up at our URL, which is audibletrial.com/lifecoachradio, that's audibletrial.com/lifecoachradio, If you sign up there, you get one free audiobook and a one-month trial of the service. That's audibletrial.com/lifecoachradio. And there are some great titles that relate directly to tonight's topics that are available on Audible. And here are some. Getting Things Done, The Art of Stress-Free Productivity, written by David Allen, narrated by David Allen himself as well. From core principles to proven tricks, Getting Things Done has the potential to transform the way you work and the way you experience work. At any level of implementation, David Allen's entertaining and thought-provoking advice shows you how to pick up the pace without wearing yourself down. And I have to say, I've actually read that one myself. I didn't listen to it. I read it many years ago, and pretty amazing. So I highly recommend that one. And then here's another one, 52 Things Kids Need from a Dad, What Fathers Can Do to Make a Lifelong Difference, written and narrated by Jay, I'm going to kill this gentleman's last name, Palitner. That's the best I'm going to get out of that. But you'll find it on Audible if you just search the title, 52 Things Kids Need from a Dad, What Fathers Can Do to Make a Lifelong Difference. Quite a few dads spend time with their kids. However, many have no clue what their kids really need. Enter the author, veteran dad of five, and his book combines straightforward features with step-up-to-the-mark challenges men will appreciate. No exhaustive and exhausting list of things you should do. No criticism of dads for being men and acting like men. Dads will feel respected and empowered and gain confidence to initiate activities that build lifelong positives into their kids. Again, the number to call here at Mark My Words, if you'd like some coaching on something that you're stuck in, is 646-716-9397. And next, we have in the queue Nigel, also from New York City. Tonight's our New York City night. I'm home tonight. So, Nigel, welcome to Mark My Words, and thanks for calling in.
Thank you for having me, Mark.
You're welcome. You're welcome. So, so tell me a little, Nigel, what's going on for you? What do you need some support with this evening?
So I haven't spoken to my father in quite some time. I haven't seen him in even longer. And basically I want to, at some point, hopefully in the near future, you know, establish a relationship with him again. I feel that maybe, a relationship with him is more important to me than to him. But it is still important to me. It also affects, you know, my relationship with my siblings. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Great. So I'm hearing that your relationship with your dad is something that's really, really important to you. And you're really wanting to solidify that, and reconnect and make that stronger.
Right. Cause right now it's basically non-existent. So.
It's non-existent. How long has that been?
Last I spoke with him, it was this year. It was like January of this year.
Mm, okay, so almost a year.
Right. And it was really just to...
You said it's longer that you spoke with him?
That's the last time I spoke with him, and it was on the phone, and I just called him. As I was leaving the Dominican Republic, I called him because my grandfather, his father, had just passed away. And he actually picked up the phone, and I was able to offer my condolences to him. But that's basically it. And then before that, it had been quite a while, and I haven't seen him in, like, over 2 years.
Wow. Okay. How's that feel for you?
Not very good. It's just, it's really, I don't know, I think it's really stupid, personally. I mean, I guess I should tell you where this all came from. It really was just because I basically came out to him as having a boyfriend, and, you know, he just completely, I mean, I told him on the phone, because I was really scared. But when I told him, you know, he played it cool on the phone. But then apparently when he got off the phone, like, he just flipped out and called everybody and all this stuff, and I haven't spoken. That's when basically it all broke down. I mean, it doesn't feel very good. It feels really kind of messed up. Just sad.
Mm-hmm. Sad.
It's just yeah, that's all. I just feel sad and you know, I think that's the main emotion. It just brings me a lot of sadness not to be able to have him in my life.
Yeah, sure. I hear how important it is to you, and I can only begin to imagine the sadness that you must feel having lost him, basically, in that way. So I'm hearing a lot of loss.
Right.
You know, absolutely. And which makes a lot of sense. I mean, you know, given how important that relationship with your dad is to you, you know, of course you're feeling sad and feeling a tremendous loss. And that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, it's something that, you know, I certainly know, both as a coach and with my volunteer experience on the Gay and Lesbian National Hotline, the LGBT National Hotline, how common this is, you know, when parents react this way. And then, you know, as gay people, experience those kinds of losses every day. So your pain is familiar, and it's quite common and quite normal in those circumstances. So is the last conversation you had with him, was that, well, other than when his dad passed away, was it the coming out conversation?
I believe so. I mean, I think I may have spoken to him briefly. The thing is, like, I had tried calling him a number of times after that conversation when I came out to him, and he basically, like, picked up the phone, and then when he realized it was me, hung up. And so, you know, that was really hurtful. And, you know, that really made me want to stop contacting him. I mean, and mind you, I still did it a few times because I was trying to convince myself that that wasn't what was happening. I guess I was in denial. But, you know, eventually I stopped for a few months, and then I went, I visited the Dominican Republic for the first time in 2 years last Christmas. And, you know, I hung out with my brothers, and I have a lot of siblings on my father's side. And there's two in particular that I'm very close to. And I basically went to the Dominican Republic to see them, and I spent a lot of time with them. And they were basically, you know, telling me that that it was the way that my father was apparently upset at the way that I came out to him, and that, you know, I should just apologize, and he supposedly would, like, start talking to me again or something along those lines. And that's why I ended up, you know, also not being too afraid to call him and wish him my condolences, because apparently he had calmed down a lot or something. Which, I mean, he did pick up the phone, and he, you know, sort of spoke to me. It was a horrible time, but...
Yeah. Well, sure. But, you know, so, you know, just something I want to acknowledge you for, Nigel. The pain that I'm hearing you felt when he hung up on you, it sounds like it was really enormous. I mean, that was really hurtful. And what I just want to acknowledge you for is the courage that you had in calling him again. It sounds like multiple times after that. You know, I heard you say that, oh, well, you know, you were kind of in denial that that's what was really happening. And nonetheless, I think it took a lot of courage for you to be persistent and keep trying to call. And I just want to acknowledge you for that strength and that courage, because that's really pretty awesome. You're welcome. Tell me, what was your relationship like with him before you came out to him?
It was interesting. I mean, my father is not the type to really. He was never very affectionate. I had only like recently, in terms of like the longer, you know, my entire life, I only really started seeing him on a semi-regular basis after, you know, when I was in high school. And so, you know, it wasn't the most affectionate relationship, but, you know, we spoke to each other, you know, it's really hard to describe. I mean, he's a very, I don't want to say dry man, but he's not.
There's a lot of warm and fuzzies there.
Right. He's not that type. You know, we were on speaking terms. Like, we spoke, and, you know, it was a one based on a lot of respect and more so obedience towards what he said, you know, as a father figure. And so, you know, I think, yeah, I mean, it was better than the current situation, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So, tell me, Nigel, describe the relationship that you want to have with him at this point.
I would like for him to have I want to be on speaking terms with him again. I want to, you know, be able to or feel comfortable calling him, you know, a couple of times a month at least. and you know, just because he does live in another country, and you know, like I said, it's not like we ever spoke too much anyway, but no, just to see, you know, how he's doing. And you know, my father is also the type to, like, if he you know, if we weren't speaking terms, I'm sure he would have wanted me to, like, go to the Dominican Republic to, like, visit for Christmas break or New Year's or something, or see him once a year, something like that, you know. And just so that I feel like an outcast right now from my father's side of the family, in a way.
Well, sure, absolutely. And the thing that you said before, too, which stuck with me, Nigel, was when you said it's probably more important to you than it is to him that you reestablish this relationship.
Right.
So that makes sense that you're feeling like a bit of an outcast, if that's, you know, if that's the way it feels for you. Tell me a little bit about, you said that it was one of your siblings that told you that he was more upset about the way that you came out to him. What was it that he didn't like about the way that you came out to him?
It's true. Like, I did kind of just drop it on him. But, you know, I was also really, really scared. So, you know, that really took a lot of courage for me to actually be able to finally tell him. But, you know, I had just started living with my current husband. And, you know, I really felt that I was tired of hiding or lying, and, you know, I just needed to tell him. So basically, I just told him, you know, I live here. Like, I called him. We were having, you know, because I usually called him, I would say, like, a few times a month. And, you know, one of the times I just called him, and, you know, he asked me where I lived or whatever, and or what I was doing. And I said, oh, I'm here. I live with my boyfriend. You know, and then he said, what? Said, I live with my boyfriend. And so, like, I repeated that a couple of times, and then he said, oh, okay. And then, you know, he just kept talking normally, then hung up, and that was pretty much it. And then I found out from, you know, my siblings that he was, like, slipping out.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So how do you feel about the way you came out to him?
I mean, I can understand, you know, him feeling that I kind of dropped this big bomb on him and that I should have done it differently. Personally, I don't know how else I could have done it that would have elicited a different reaction. I think it really is just a matter of what I told him than the way I told him that bothered him so much, or that affected him so much.
Well, let me ask you this then. Sure. Mm-hmm. So if you were to go back in time, how different or how similar would the way you tell him be if you had the chance to do it again? How different or how similar would it be?
I mean, I guess maybe I could have prepared him a little more, and I would still do it over the phone. but I would probably, just sort of eased him into it. Like, listen, I want to talk to you about something, and then maybe let him know.
Okay. So, what do you think it will take for you to establish the kind of connection with him that you want to establish? You said you want to be able to talk to him a couple of times a month and get things back to, something close to similar to what they were before. What would have to happen for you to feel comfortable doing that?
I don't know. I thought about sending him a letter and just apologizing to him because that's what he needs to hear. It feels really ingenuine for me to do that, but
Tell me about that. What feels ingenuine about that?
Well, because I don't particularly feel that I owe him an apology.
Okay.
If anything, I think he owes me an apology. So, but I'm willing to let that go. I'm just also afraid of what to that might be. If I, start that conversation with me apologizing to him when I don't really believe that I owe him an apology.
Okay. So let's put the apology piece aside for a second. And let's look at, because what I hear you saying is that wouldn't really feel authentic for you right now. What's the most authentic, honest thing that you would like to communicate to him right now?
That I love him, that he's my father, and that no matter what, I only get one. And, just be honest, I guess, and just let him know that I do care for him, and I do want him in my life.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How would it feel if you led the conversation with that?
I'm actually really, I guess, uncomfortable doing that.
You're comfortable or uncomfortable? Which did you say?
Uncomfortable.
You're uncomfortable doing that. Okay, so tell me a little bit more about that. What's the discomfort about?
Just because of the it's not something, like I don't remember him ever telling me that like he loves me or anything like that. So, and I've said that to him, like, but it's just weird. It just feels weird to, especially like, because I haven't spoken to him in so long and because of what happened. I don't know.
Okay. How does it feel when you think about including that somewhere in the conversation, if starting with that feels rather uncomfortable?
Honestly, I think
or saying it at all challenging.
Right, I think it's just saying it. I think if anything, I would probably do that like in a letter.
Okay. Okay, great. So, what would be the most authentic way to start the conversation on the phone with him? Because what I'm hearing is that an apology doesn't feel right or authentic for you. Starting off with, telling him that you love him and all that doesn't feel the right way to start for you either. So what I like is that you've got some clarity. You've got some clarity around what won't work for you. So what might work for you as a potential starting point in that conversation?
If I were to call him, just saying hi, you know, ask him how he's doing, and hoping that he doesn't hang up on me.
And, okay.
You know, just ask him how's life, and I guess just like a check-in type of thing.
And then how would you introduce the topic of conversation?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know that I want
okay.
to. I don't know if I don't know.
Right. Okay. So, you know, I'm just thinking of a gazillion different options here, and I'm just wondering, I know what some people do, is they start off the conversation in a letter instead of a phone call.
Right.
How much of an option would that be for you?
I think that's something that I would feel a lot more comfortable with, and I've thought about that in the past, and I've tried to psych myself up to write the letter, and then I always like just push it off. But I think that would probably be the best approach for me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So writing a letter feels much, much more the way to go for you than making a phone call.
Yes.
Okay. Great. That's what I'm sensing, because as we're talking about the phone call, I just feel like your energy around that is really resistant. So I'm getting that's not where you're at. And then when we talk about the possibility of a letter instead, your energy changed. I felt like the faucet opened a little bit on that one. So tell
Absolutely.
Me a little bit. You said you've thought about writing a letter, but then you stop and you don't get it done. So what's truly stopping you from writing it?
I mean, there's I guess it's just me. I'm I don't know. It's like I don't know what to put in the letter that's going to be worth something, that's going to, you know, inspire the relationship to restart, or for him to want to talk to me, or, you know, to call me or something along those lines.
What do you want
know,
him
I also,
to think or say or feel when he reads it?
That I'm his son, I guess. Or I don't know if, I mean, I know he knows I'm his son, but that he wants to have me in his life. I don't know, to care.
Okay. So I'm hearing that you want him to want you in his life.
Right.
Okay. So great, and you know, I mean, you know, what kid, grown up or not, what kid doesn't want his parents to want him in his life, right? So of course you do. That makes complete sense. Tell me, what do you think he needs in order to be able to feel that, or to get in touch with his feelings of that?
I think, you know, based on what my brother told me, and knowing him as well, I think he needs kind of like an ego boost in a way, where like he just needs to feel. He wants to hear an apology from me, and I think that would allow his. tried to, you know, be, I guess, abated and allow himself to call me or to get in touch with me or...
Mm-hmm. And what would you have to, what would you have to let go of for yourself in order to give him that apology?
I guess the, my feelings of unfairness and of just the blame I have towards him, like how much I don't know, I just feel like it's really unfair and unwarranted the way that he treated me.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Sure. You know, it's very painful to have a parent respond to you that way. So I think that, you know, your feelings of pain, being hurt, you know, are right on. And you have every right to those feelings. I'm wondering, you know, you use the word pride in terms of your dad, that his, you know, his pride was hurt and that would kind of restore it. How possible is it, and I'm going to kind of go straight with this, no pun intended, how possible is it that one of the things you might need to let go of is pride in the same way?
Oh, certainly.
I'm not sure there is. Okay.
Certainly, yeah. I think it's, I mean, that's one of the biggest things. It's why, you know, I've been thinking of just giving that to him to let go of my pride and just, you know, apologizing to him because that's what he needs. But, you know, that is also hard
sure.
to do.
Absolutely. When you've been hurt, it's very, very difficult.
Right. So... yeah, I think that would probably be the main thing. It's just to let go of my pride and just give him what he needs and hope for the best, because then it would be really in his court. The ball would really be in his court.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, the other thing that I'm thinking too is, is this, you know, in coaching, we talk about ways of acknowledging and validating someone's experience and feelings without agreeing or disagreeing, acknowledging
right.
that it makes sense in their world they feel that way. How can you do that with him with regard to his feelings and his experience of your phone call that day in a way that lets him know that, you know, you hear him, and you're keeping your own evaluation of whether you agree with it out of it, but that, you know, expressing that it makes sense to you. Well, how could you do that?
I think that's a great idea. I hadn't thought of that, actually. I think that's certainly, yeah, that I can certainly put that into a letter, and I think that would also allow me to not sort of not have to let go of my pride or to some degree, and just still allow him to feel that I'm kind of coming to him as the father and apologizing to him, because it is true. I mean, it makes perfect sense that, you know, based on his experiences in his life, that he would feel that way and he would react that way. And, you know, I sort of expected it, which is, you know, was part of the reason why I waited so long and did it when I, you know, was independent and whatnot. So.
Sure. You know, so I'm wondering how valid is it really? I mean, if we really look at his world, how valid is it that he would have expected a little bit more preparation? But like you had said earlier about, you know, Dad, I got to talk to you about something, and this is real difficult for me. Like, how valid is it that he would have responded if you had done that?
You know, maybe he would still talk to me, but I'm not sure that I would like the subject of the conversation. Mm-hmm. So I'm really not sure that I just envisioned that being going a completely different direction, and just you know, just him telling me that that's BS and that I need to change and all of this stuff. So, you know, sure, I could have kept him in my life that way, but I don't think that that would have made me happy either.
Right, that wouldn't have made the difference in his reaction. So what I hear you saying is that your siblings are saying that would have made the difference for him, but you're not really buying that.
Right, because that's what he told my siblings, and I'm not buying it. And you know, even my siblings don't buy it. You know, my siblings are like, you know,
okay,
there's just, you know, it doesn't matter because he was going to react that way anyway.
Let me ask you this then: what is, with regard to then acknowledging and validating his experience, then if it's not about the way you came out, right? What do you think the real issue is for him that you could acknowledge and validate?
Well, the fact that I am gay, and that his son is gay, and that I know that that's really difficult, or it must have been, to deal with at first. Even though he always joked about one of his sons must be gay, but you know, it's
really
different to put it right. He always did because he has so many kids, and he said one of them must be gay.
How many of you are there?
Honestly, I'd lost count. There's like, when I went to DR, I just met another one. So it's like 12 at this point.
Wow.
And it's all boys except for one girl. My father clearly doesn't watch TV.
It's interesting because I guess if 1 in 10 people is gay, then yeah, there's probably a pretty high likelihood, right?
Right.
So,
right.
So what I'm hearing you say there, Nigel, then is that it makes sense to you that having a gay son feels upsetting for him.
Yes.
How would it feel to acknowledge and validate that to him, and not judge that as bad and wrong of him?
I feel fine with it. I think I can definitely do that. I can definitely do that for him.
Mm-hmm. What difference do you think it might make for him?
Well, I mean, I would hope that just as it, you know, makes a difference with pretty much anybody when you validate their feelings, that it would somehow make a difference for him in the way that he feels towards me, and maybe make him more willing to, I guess, accept me back into his life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great. Because here's the thing, Nigel, I don't think that, you know, like, certainly we're not gonna find very quickly what's the right conversation to have and the magic formula for the conversation to make your dad do a 180 on this.
Right.
But I think that what you will get to is where to start the conversation in a way that's powerful. And then once you do that, it's like the rest of it just goes a hell of a lot better than it otherwise would have, right?
Right.
And it sounds like we landed on something there that could create an opening. Am I right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, and here's the thing, too, and I'll give you this example, and this is about how do we acknowledge and validate someone's experience and tell them that it makes total sense when we completely disagree.
Okay? Right.
Because that comes up when I teach that in coaching, right? How do you, when you completely disagree with someone's point of view, how can you possibly tell them that they have the right to their feelings and that they make sense? So, you know, as I said earlier, I volunteer on the Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, and Transgender National Hotline. And I remember, you know, we get calls with these kinds of issues all the time. So there was one time, the umpteenth million call was, you know, a woman who called and said that her son came out to her, and she was really, really, really upset. She was angry. She was upset. She was hurt. She felt like, you know, she said, I don't want him to go to hell. She had some religious concerns. She was embarrassed. She didn't want anybody else to know. And she wanted to know, how can she steer him down a different path? How can she cure this? What happened that made this happen? And how can she steer him away from this so he could have a normal life? And some of the stuff that she was talking about was just pushing all of my buttons, you know, as a gay man. And I we hear that kind of stuff all the time, and they're like, oh my God, do people still think this? So, but I, you know, she was in my lap for those 20 minutes in that phone call. The universe put her together with me for some reason.
Right.
And to judge her experience would not have served her or me. There was something on her journey that she needed, which is why she was sent to me, and there was something on my journey that I needed, which is why she was sent to me. So I honored that. And what I said to her was, I said, I'm hearing that your son is like the most important thing to you. He was her only child, too, I think. Your son is the most important thing in the world to you. She said, yeah, he really is. And I said, well, then it makes complete sense that when you hear something from him, that he's shared with you something that you think is harmful to him and bad for him, that you'd be really upset, freaked out, and want to steer him away from it. What mother would not want to do that if she felt her child was in danger? So it makes sense that you feel that way. Now, I wasn't agreeing with her perspective, but it made real sense to me why she was upset.
Right.
And we ended up, we had a great connection on that call. And it was a great call for her, and it was a great call for me. But she really ended, we really ended that call with her really feeling helped, and I had given her some resources and whatnot. So, and, you know, what she got by the end of that call was how important her son was to her, and that if she wanted to make a real difference and stay connected with him, you know, that there was things that she can do in her conversation with him to work through this in a different way than the way that she was doing. And I couldn't tell her what that way was. That wasn't up to me, but she saw that she needed to do something different. And then I was able to give her some resources where she could begin to explore that on a more ongoing and more in-depth basis than we're prepared to do on the hotline. But, you know, so that's an example of acknowledging and validating someone's experience, their feelings, their experience of something, without having to agree with it, because actually acknowledging and validating isn't about agreeing to begin with, right? And, you know, and even if we starkly disagree with it, how we can still do that. What do you hear in that story that is helpful to you with your dad?
I think, you know, just that you are able to understand, you know, why he felt the way that he felt and why he acted the way that he did. And it just really, it really allows me to, you know, let go of a lot of the blame, because it's understandable, you know. He doesn't want everybody in that very homophobic country to know that he has a gay son, or he at least he didn't, now that the cat's out of the bag. So obviously that was going to bother him. And, you know, just the fact that that I am gay, like, he doesn't agree with it because of whatever reasons, he doesn't believe that it's okay. You know, that's, I mean, he's a very grown man, so his beliefs are set in, and that's, it's just understandable. His whole reaction and his feelings, like, I can validate those for him, and I can see myself doing that in a letter. I'll probably send him an email, and then follow up with a phone call to let him know that I sent him an email. And then hopefully at that point, you know, maybe, I don't know, we'll see. I guess I can only hope for the best.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. You know, and I think ultimately you want him, it sounds like you want him to not judge you. And I'm just wondering how powerful it is for you to role model that by not judging him. You know, I believe it was Gandhi who said, you know, be the change you want to see in the world. And, you know, you want to see more smiles in the world? Smile more. You know, it always starts with us, right? What are we doing first? And it sounds like what you've landed on really begins to demonstrate that same thing for your dad, that you want from him, and by role modeling that, you know, that could be very, very powerful. And then he can also see a little bit more about who you are beyond just being gay, that he can really see who his son is as a grown man who takes responsibility for his relationships and his life.
Absolutely.
Great. So what's the most powerful insight you got from this conversation, Nigel?
the fact that I can absolutely, validate his feelings and without necessarily feeling uncomfortable or in genuine doing so, just because his feelings are his. So.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, I'm glad to hear that, and I invite you to and hope that you will keep me posted on how that goes.
Will do. Thank you so much, Mark. You were very, very helpful.
Great. Good. I'm glad, Nigel, and thanks for the call, and great. So we'll be in touch. So thanks, Nigel.
Thank you. Have a good night.
You too. You're very welcome. Wow. So great. You know, those relationships with our parents can be so important and so riddled with all kinds of stuff. And it's important to so many of us that we heal. So before we close for the night, I'd like to announce some upcoming shows here on the Life Coach Radio Network that are hosted by my awesome colleagues here on the Life Coach Radio Network's team of talented and dedicated coaches, all dedicated to making your life just a little bit more of what you want it to be. So my next show, of course, is on December 21st, and you can go to blogtalkradio.com/Life Coach Radio Network and scroll through the upcoming episodes until you find the next episode of Mark My Words and click the blue reminder button so that you won't miss it. And then tomorrow night at 8 p.m. is Spiritually Speaking with Jen and Rebecca. That's a talk radio show on spirituality and life, and it's hosted by Reverend Jennifer Hope Kotler and Rebecca Stevens. And on Thursday, December 11th at 8 p.m. is How to Create a Lasting Influence. Top leaders and successful business people understand that in order to affect their environment and redirect circumstances in their favor, they must have the power to exert influence over any situation in which they find themselves. Listen and learn how to begin creating this type of lasting influence in ways that will help you succeed in any facet of life. So, that about wraps it up for tonight, as I invite you to mark your words if you'd like. If you have feedback about the show, go to markmywordsradio.com and scroll down to the feedback link. If you have feedback that you'd like to communicate to the Life Coach Radio Network, visit us at blogtalkradio.com/Life Coach Radio Network and then click the follow button and send us a message. And I hope you enjoyed the past hour and that you found it engaging and enlightening and stimulating. I look forward to speaking with you all again on December 21st at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Thank you for listening to Mark My Words. I'm Mark, and those are my words. Good night.